welcome to a new episode of The Legal Landscape, released by lawyers from Haynes & Boone's AI and Deep Learning Practice Group. We gather today to explore the exciting and ever-evolving and, of course, occasionally controversial world of artificial intelligence. My name is Eugene Goryanov, and I am a partner in the Chicago office of the firm, and I'm joined today by two excellent technical people from an AI company called Apollo, Bill Clayman and his colleague Konstantin Goltsev. Gentlemen, please introduce yourselves briefly.
Thank you so much for having us on the call here, Eugene. It's a pleasure and an honor. We're genuinely excited to discuss the legal industry. Our expertise in the space has taught us so incredibly much, both about the promises and sometimes the complexities of the legal industry. I am Bill Clayman. I am the CEO of Apollo. That's Apollo with one L. You can check us out at apollo.us. And we are a GPU, a hub, that is built with intelligent AI and ML tools. And, you know, believe it or not, the legal industry is certainly one of those that we get a chance to support. And that's me.
Yeah, and my name is Konstantin. I am a CTO of Apollo, the very same GPU hub. And very happy to be here with Bill and talk about legal AI.
Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. But before we get started, our standard disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be legal advice and does not establish an attorney-client relationship. The topics we discuss are subject to change. Legal advice of any nature should be sought from your legal counsel. With that said, tell us a little bit more about Apollo, guys.
Sure. Let me get that started, Eugene. And again, thanks for having us on. Apollo was actually started as an organization called Neuro in 2019 in Ukraine. And obviously, because of the geopolitics, the company had to be repositioned and moved entirely to the United States, which we're now here in the U.S. Officially, as of January of 2023, but we are a, let's call it an officially VC-funded, capital-backed organization as of about a month and a half ago, but we've been in the business for quite some time. Apollo, in its nature, is an organization that strives to do things at three core elements, the pillars of our organization, and something I recommend everybody on this call really think about, and that is AI ethics, AI transparency, and AI sustainability. The company was built, interestingly enough, out of frustration by AI and ML developers to be a interoperability tool. Think of it kind of like an operating system for everything that is machine learning, neural network architecture, and AI development, but in one single platform. So all of your favorite tools, all of your most important processes, all of your favorite libraries like TensorFlow and Git and everything integrated into one ecosystem. Now, what changed really the organization very, very importantly was that we allowed our platform, and this is where the legal industry and much more of these highly regulated organizations came to work with us, is that we allow Apollo to run anywhere. And quite literally, we have customers running them on-prem that can't have their data reside in the cloud. We have some living, our Apollo living in the public cloud, say like an Amazon, for example. And our ecosystem, our platform, once again, lives within a physical colocation data center. So a data center that has shared tenancy. So our platform allows organizations to build and construct, really to democratize their AI and machine learning journey, and really control their data in any way possible. Now, the big thing is that we also have physical resources so that an organization doesn't have to necessarily go in the cloud. They can use our GPUs with their data and know that it's being stored quite literally anywhere that they require.
That sounds really fascinating. Well, how do you see AI and machine learning actually being implemented in the legal market?
Well, I'll start. And then I'd love for Konstantin to jump in from some of the technical aspects as maybe throwing in some use cases as well. One of the biggest areas that we've seen growth is that we're trying to drive imagination from these new emerging industries. So things like healthcare, financial services, even research and government are all starting to approach us with very direct questions. Here's our data. Here is a real problem that we're trying to solve. And ultimately, how do we use this data to solve something special that we could never do in the past? And this is where we're talking about traditional pattern recognition AI solutions. And I hate to oversimplify it, but now we're sort of entering this new era of AI processing. So one of the really most fascinating things that we've been doing has been an AI journey, really. A customer will come to us or any kind of organization. And this is very, very important. And Konstantin is going to jump in with some real use cases here in just a second. What we don't want to do is we don't want to build a elephant on a unicycle, right? It looks cool, but it does absolutely nothing for the business. So in the case of, for example, a legal entity, what we try and do is this. What data are we going to be using? What problem, ultimately, are we going to be solving? And what is a meaningful and, more importantly, measurable outcome can we see from this type of project? So for example, how do we reduce errors, for example, in how lawyers are creating templates or for some certain documents? How do we increase billable hours? How do we improve collaboration between clients and their legal teams or legal assistants? So again, these are just kind of firing from the hip here use cases. But Konstantin, maybe you've got some other ones that you can jump in here as well with.
Yes. Thank you, Bill. So it's very clear that we try to really go after some measurable outcomes. And this latest crop of generative AI systems like LLMs, they're really good for content creation. You know, they're kind of these universal completion engines. You give it A and it will probably know how to do B and C. And that typically can translate into a lot of time savings, right? For example, generating legal templates or preparing some of the initial docs and whatnot. Also, very prominent is something called RAG research. This is retrieval augmented generation, where this is, you know, the case where you have a huge corpus of documents, and then using large language model, you can kind of chat with the data, right? Utilizing the knowledge expert system built on top of your data within LLM. So these are the major use cases. And of course, they come with number of caveats, right? And we can discuss later. There are also quite a big crop of agentic-based AI venture-funded companies that try to be your paralegals, assistants, and just a gamut of use cases.
Understood. Well, look, Bill, you mentioned repetitive tasks and templatizing a work product. How do you see that actually being created by AI, and especially the solution that you guys offer?
Well, I'm not a legal expert, so by all means, you can let me know if this is something wildly unpopular. But one of the ways that we've seen a very successful implementation of artificial intelligence, for example, is a semantic search. In a semantic search architecture, this is so much more than just you entering a search query and getting a pretty blue link. I mean, this is how we as humans have been conditioned to interact with data for a very long time. Now, these types of data searches produce wholly originally generated content based on questions of our data. So, for example, in an internal system, and I do want to make sure that I really, really specify that there are a lot of data and compliance measurement of work that goes into planning this kind of architecture. But for example, in an internal kind of setting, you could, in theory, create a semantic search architecture where you could ask, all right, well, this is potentially the judge that we're going to be presenting to. All their cases are publicly available. What is either the best course of action, or how does this judge usually rule, or what kind of cases does this individual see, or who are the other attorneys that are representing the other client, and how do they usually perform in court? You can begin to ask these sorts of very detailed questions and have an assistant level type of communication with a legal expert. Now, the other architecture that we've seen is templatizing work that usually takes a very, very long time to do. So in the case of, for example, internal documents, internal legal briefs, documentation, for example, that can automatically ingest information and then put it into a certain type of template. We've seen this kind of work within hospital systems, many, many use cases around things like services environments. So think like ticketing and agencies where you're troubleshooting some kind of an issue where an engineer might have to spend hours creating one sort of document, where a lot of that can be templatized, reviewed, and then stored away from future reference. Konstantin, any other kinds of interesting use cases you can add?
Yes. So thank you, Bill. This was a good list. There is another one, a very interesting one, that kind of combines all of the above into more of an AI agent type of environment. And what we are playing with is this very interesting use case where you actually have, quote unquote, an AI judge, right, that is powered by a knowledge graph, an LLM, and then you can kind of debate and present the case, right? So on one hand, you can have this AI judge agent where you fine-tune this agent on the previous decisions and court cases that were made by that individual or a group of individuals or a certain, you know, legal stance, let's say, of an agency, and then present kind of your arguments and debate against it. So this is kind of, you know, the courtroom simulator, we called it, which is, you know, a very intriguing development.
Where do you generally get the data to allow your system to either play judge and jury or, you know, as Bill was talking about earlier, answering targeted questions?
Mm-hmm. So in this case, we rely on the client, on the law firm to supply the data, right? Data provenance is a very big question. So we need to work with the client to make sure that this data is available and we can train on this. And obviously the solution is also a proprietary solution for the client. So it's a very good question. We can't obviously just, you know, go and rampage through the data that we are not sure about the provenance or ownership of.
Makes sense. As you may understand and appreciate, a lot of lawyers are very sensitive to confidentiality and, of course, attorney-client privilege. So how do you address the concerns about, you know, people always hear that if you type something into a ChatGPT prompt, your input arguably becomes a part of the training data. How do you avoid those, or how do you address those situations when it comes to legal and when you have all these additional considerations, again, confidentiality, disclosures, HIPAA, attorney-client, and so on?
Yeah, so in our case, it's quite simple. As Bill said, in Apollo, we make sure that all of these language models and all other algorithmic goodness runs within your systems. So in the same way that you trust, let's say, the confidential data to your email systems or databases, we typically recommend that clients build their AI smarts within the same IT perimeter so that data access is automatically covered by that IT perimeter and the best use practices that exist within the firm. And obviously, what we also recommend, and it's a must, is to use open source conditioned large language models on clients' own infrastructure, right? So don't send your data to OpenAI. Don't send your data to Microsoft. So data doesn't travel outside of your systems.
Understood. Bill, earlier you mentioned that there's many different kind of use cases for AI and machine learning in legal. Is it possible to use your solution or other ML AI solutions for like legal research, maybe even document drafting?
Absolutely. And as Konstantin had mentioned, there's a very careful approach to how information is curated and worked with. So one of the big things that sets us apart, and Eugene, I want to make sure I answer your question because it is a good one. And this is kind of piggybacking from the previous question. One of the biggest markets that we are actively trying to impact is that market that's saying exactly what you were concerned about. I don't want my information to be used to train some big foundational model. I want to have more data control and more data privacy. So deploying with a platform like Apollo, like I said earlier, allows you to deploy an ecosystem quite literally anywhere. Now, as far as a use case is concerned, well, let's drive through one. We have a legal entity, right? And all of their stuff, their information is stored on-premise. And they say, we would like to create a data model with which we could interact and ask questions and then also create templatized documents. Now, in this scenario, to keep and on par with data regulations and security requirements, everything would be deployed on-prem. It would never touch a public cloud ecosystem. And like Konstantin said, all of the critical tools for data modeling and development would all be available directly to you with only available resources that you require spanning out in the cloud with none if that's the case. So in that situation, we would use existing data from the law firm, right, which many times there's much of it to be able to reference. We'll use that data to train a model with which you can then interact. So, and now you can effectively, once it's trained and once we, you know, fine tune the architecture, because, you know, one of the pitfalls we didn't get a chance to talk about are things like hallucinations and biases in data that you got to make sure, you have to make sure that aren't there and that the output is very clean and obviously desirable. Doesn't, quote, look desirable because that's a hallucination, but is actually the outcome that you're trying to get to. And that's where the whole training and fine tuning comes in. So Eugene, to answer your question, you can absolutely create what we would call like a semantic search or an internal searchable architecture where a legal assistant, a lawyer, paralegal can go in, ask data a question, and get conscious answer back. Now, similarly, you can templatize this information. If there's one type of document that you keep having to recreate and it takes you an hour to 2 hours, for example, to create one of those, you can absolutely templatize it, enter in just a select amount of information, and then a final output document would be given to you to review. Now, obviously, this is not to replace people, but to augment them, to give them more value to bring back to the law firm.
Now, of course, when you mean conscious, you don't mean to suggest that your AI has become sentient, right?
No. And we don't have cameras here. I was using air quotes, realizing now that you can't see it. Yes. When we use the word conscious, it's a very careful word that we use. It's not, there's no sentience here. The term conscious is that you are getting a wholly original response based on a predictive set of tokens, right, that is trained against your data. So none of this is a machine that's going Skynet for you. Rather, it is an assistant level of an intelligence that's trying to help you out with whatever question you have.
You know, you can never have a true AI podcast without talking about Skynet.
I agree.
I just feel like if you didn't mention it at least once, we just didn't do our job here.
Agreed.
Well, what about other repeatable tasks that lawyers engage in? For example, due diligence, or maybe even some kind of a chat with clients or some other kind of natural language processing application. Tell me how I can use AI in that context.
For example, the courtroom and judge simulator that you mentioned, Konstantin, can you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, in this case, what we are going to do, we are going to grab a data set that characterizes, let's say, a certain judge or certain committee or an agency. And what we do is we fine-tune the LLM on that data. So basically what we do, in the same way that we train LLM to become smart, we run this data set in training mode on that LLM and make sure that LLM memorizes and replicates that content really well. And when it does that, it kind of compacts that knowledge inside of it. And based on this, you can create with some graph models an approximation of, you know, this judge, right? So basically, you would be able to simulate with LLM the patterns of reactions that this simulated judge will have to certain inputs. And on the other side, right, you first test drive this entity, AI agents that you have created with existing cases that were presented to it and see if it reacts in the same way that it reacted in the past, to make sure that you have a robust representation. And then after that, you know, you can legitimately attack it with new cases, new kind of stances, and see the outputs. And of course, this is only good in context of a lawyer looking into the results and finding inspiration or finding new angles and kind of, you know, training against future possible outcomes. In no way, shape, or form, it can substitute, you know, the actual judge or the actual job of a lawyer. But it can be extremely useful.
Well, so you were talking about some potential considerations to keep in mind with any AI solution. Why don't we just cut to the chase? obviously, this is a machine that is trained to simulate responses. What are some challenges and considerations associated with adopting AI options in the legal industry?
Yeah, absolutely. So we should broadly view current crop of systems as so-called co-pilots, right? They're labor-saving devices, mental labor-saving devices, kind of code assistants that help programmers right now to code. And if you're skillful when using it, you can save quite a bit of time, right? Instead of typing up some boring, you know, let's say remappings in your code, you can have a good prompt, and your coding copilot can do it, saving you a bunch of time, let's say 10 or 15 minutes of typing and whatnot. And similarly here, right, the current crop of systems is large language models. They're pattern completers, right? And that's what they do. That's how they've been trained. So they are not planners. They're not thinkers. They're not analyzers. And this job cannot be replaced and delegated to LLM for now. Right. So because they're good pattern completers and pattern matchers, right, and they do have some representation, a deeper representation of data, they can do stuff like semantic search, right, search in the space of meanings and, you know, return you ideas out of a big set of documents. Or they can complete your sentence, they can produce document template, but they're not going to follow the case plan for you and, you know, do the analysis. Analysis has always to be done by human. But properly conditioned system with something called like a knowledge graph, right, that will kind of imbue that LLM with some of the ability to keep the state and do analysis and whatnot, and a proper RAG, retrieval augmented generation component that does semantic search on the data, and properly fine-tuned LLM positioned together can create that agent that can be a labor-saving device, right? So for instance, if it's a document completion, you can ask it to create a template. So let's say you have created in your law firm, let's say 10,000 real estate contracts in New York, for instance, right? So we'll fine-tune LLM on that, and it will be able to create 10,000 first LLM contracts with proper prompts and even fill it in. However, but, you know, that contract will be there. Always at this stage, there should be a human who is supposed to check that work. Now, still, it's an enormously labor-saving device because it's much easier to check something quickly for consistency than to create it from scratch, right? So a paralegal, for instance, would then spend, he would push the button, you know, add the prompt and new information, the new contract would be spit out, and instead of drafting it, which would probably spend half an hour doing, he'll spend 5 minutes checking it. Well, 6x labor-saving device, and quality probably would go up, so stuff like that. Similarly, if you're doing research for the case, right, LLM can generate in the space of ideas, you know, some relevant cases, pull everything up, but still it's on you to check the consistency, right? Because there is a chance of hallucination still. I mean, if you fine tune the model on your data quite well and use knowledge graph, that chance of hallucination goes down. Maybe it goes down to by, you know, 98%, it becomes only 2% still there. So still, somebody needs to go over this, you know, over the found facts, check them quickly, and, you know, again, maybe save a couple of hours of looking through the paperwork, right, and searching the PDFs. But still, you know, in the end, it's an assistant.
Well, so it sounds like the solutions that we're talking about here, they're going to be great supplements to any law firm that is looking to make work more efficient while at the same time still involving humans to confirm that the work is exactly what is expected.
Yes, there is a good analogy here that these LLM agents right now in knowledge kind of marketplace, they can help mediocre people to become good, and they can help excellent people to become 10x more productive.
I think that's a great note to wrap up our conversation today. Thank you both for joining us today. And thank you to our listeners for joining in to the episode of Legal Landscape. You can find today's episode and future ones on major podcasting platforms. Our podcasts and relevant articles about AI topics can also be located at the firm's AI and Deep Learning practice page, which can be found at hainesboone.com. Our practice page also contains contact information for all lawyers in the practice group. please feel free to reach out to any of us if you'd like to suggest topics for future episodes. Thank you, everyone, and take care.